Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever from North America is my colleague from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, incredible games, lots of controversy on and off the field. It's just a normal week in the NFL, isn't it?
It is unbelievable. We have so many talking points that we could turn this thing into, two 1-hour shows a week if you wanted, or a filibuster 2-hour show.
All right, there's so much good stuff to talk about, but I'm British, so we always focus on the negative. So I want to get, and also, if I don't get it off my chest, I'll be wound up for the first 30 minutes of this show. So let's start with Aqib Talib, okay? Aqib Talib's poke in the eye of Dwayne Allen. So Dwayne Allen and Von Miller are going at it at the end of the Colts and Broncos game. In comes Aqib Talib and deliberately, I say, pokes Dwayne Allen with two fingers in the eye. And then, obviously, that's a penalty which keeps the drive going for the Colts. They run out the clock. They win an impressive game, which I want to talk about a little bit later, the win for the Colts. But Aqib Talib's actions, to me, Jeff, were disgusting, despicable, classless. You don't go after another man's eyesight.
You know what, man? Let's go back. Here's a guy with a history, and you know, go all the way back to when he was drafted, and then you know, early in his career, had the incident in Dallas where there was gunfire involved. He blamed his mother, and then you know, interestingly enough, Aqib and I lived in the same condo complex in Dallas, so I had a chance to get to know him a little bit or be around him enough to have conversations with him. And his I'm not sure if it was his wife or his girlfriend and their baby. They all lived there, and I found him very quiet.
Probably
and
dirty,
very quiet, and you know, kind of stayed to himself. But there seemed to be kind of a simmering undertone to him all the time. And the incident on the field doesn't surprise me because he plays so intense and so aggressive. And you know, this is one of those deals where players, you know, there's a headbutt between the Colts player and Von Miller, and then he comes over and, you know, I guess it feels it's his responsibility to mediate in the thing, and he sticks his finger right in the guy's eye. Now, I agree with you 100%. When you go after somebody's eye, there's no excuse in that one. And we're going to go through the process. He's been suspended a game. Now he's appealed his suspension. You know, he's going to have to go before the league and, you know, say I heard his excuse today that his hand slipped up into his eye. Well, it looked anyway on video that it was a pretty, you know, premeditated poke in the eye.
Jeff, this is what gets my goat, because here's that quote. He says, "I think my hand slipped there and hit his face. He acted like he got into an 18-passenger car wreck. I guess that's the type of guy he is." So he's put this straight away onto Dwayne Allen's shoulders. He's blaming Dwayne Allen for overreacting.
Hey! Now let's look around. What's going on right now in the league? Right, I'm seeing it from players to players. Right, I'm seeing it from player to ex-girlfriend. I'm seeing it from coach to player. In three different cases, it's guys not owning up to their responsibilities in the incident. Obviously, you know, you watched it, you know, all millions of people watched it. There was no slipping of the hand up into the face mask, none of that. But, you know, again, the issue's not with Dwayne Allen. The issue's with Aqib Talib,
yeah.
Right? The issue's, you know, not with Greg Hardy's girlfriend. The issue is with Greg Hardy. In the case of Jeff Fisher, you know, attacking, Rodney Harrison in the media. The issue's not with Rodney Harrison. The issue's with the history that the Rams have of, you know, playing outside the boundaries of the game, you know, and Greg Williams. So, you know, again, let's deal with the facts and the issues, not with offloading.
Yeah, hold your water on Jeff Fisher. We're going to get to that one in a second, Jeff. That's my second rant. I've just got to get this one off my chest. I mean, I think...
Go, man, go.
I think if Aqib Talib manages to overturn this ruling on appeal, then the NFL might as well not throw down any punishments ever again. I don't know what grounds he would have for appeal. That's being heard later today. So by the time people download this podcast, we're recording on Tuesday morning, we may know the outcome of that appeal. But Jeff, I mentioned this in the studios on Sky Sports on Sunday evening, and I thought back to how we kind of cover The Premier League here in the UK, and I was thinking back to Luis Suarez and all the controversy that surrounded him in the World Cup and during his time at Liverpool. I think the British media would be going berserk if Aqib Talib happened in the Premier League. And there aren't that many sending offs or ejections in the NFL. I mean, is this a flaw? To me, that's one of the few flaws in the NFL, is I don't think you hurt players with a financial fine. Now, players will say money's money, and if it's going out your pocket, then it hurts. But, you know, I think you hurt a player like they're trying to do now with a one-game suspension. But also, what more could Aqib Talib do on the field of play to actually get himself ejected? To me, that is where there's a discrepancy. Luke Kuechly last year was appealing at Lambeau Field to an official. He put his hand on the official's shoulder, and he got ejected from that game. Talib is trying to take somebody's eye out, and he doesn't get ejected.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's any time there's intent and clear intent to harm another player, that should be grounds for automatic ejection. And, you know, again, that there's two real separate issues here, in my opinion. Number one is how the game's officiated and the officials taking control of the game. And again, I know that, you know, the league doesn't want it to be over-officiated, and, you know, the officials should be transparent, and, you know, you can't see them on the field. But here's a situation where they have to protect the players, right? And this kind of stuff leads to other things during the course of a game. And I really believe that the officials should be really firm in, you know, it's amazing. The league will penalize you faster for celebration issues than they will for poking an opponent in the eye. Mm. So, again, I think it's one of those things that the officials need to take control of. They control the game, right? They say the coaches are responsible for controlling the game. Well, the fact of the matter is the officiating controls the game. If you officiate the game in such a way that you're not going to put up with this, you make it clear early in the game you're not going to put up with it, then you're not going to get it because, you know, the players will understand. Now, again, when somebody is not ejected for something as, you know, a gratuitous violence like that, then what message does that send to the rest of the players?
Yeah, I guess it was I guess it's lucky it was late in the game, Jeff, because there was no chance for retribution. If players had started trying to take revenge into their own hands, that was taken out of it because it was late in the fourth quarter.
Let me just tell you what I heard yesterday from an NFL player that he's got to understand now he's made himself a target, because anytime there's a kind of an unwritten code amongst the players and in the game that anytime somebody comes after one of yours, then you're going to go after one of theirs, and it's going to be him is the one that they're going to go after. Now, it may be backside of a play, a receiver cuts him or whatever, but the players don't put up with that kind of stuff. And there's, you know, it's kind of a, like I said, an unwritten code in the locker room and on the field that, you know, you try and injure one of our guys, then you better be ready and you better keep your head on a swivel. And that's, again, that's how this whole stuff escalates. And then all of a sudden you got, you know, real issues. So, again, I put it on the officials. They got to take control of the game. That's what they're there for.
All right, let's stay with the theme of players taking care of each other, because, Jeff, these hits to the head are becoming prevalent around the NFL. We had Jeff Heath on Ricardo Lockett, which was a nasty-looking one in the Dallas-Seattle game a couple of weeks ago. On Sunday, Teddy Bridgewater is sliding to give himself up on a play, and LaMarcus Joyner of the Rams comes in and nails him, and you see the footage straight away. Bridgewater was out cold. He was asleep on the AstroTurf. You know, that's, again, it goes down to the officials, and they've got to punish that. Surely these players, they talk about it being a brotherhood. They've got to stop trying to take each other out of the head.
Yeah, and, you know,
that's easier said than done when I sit where I sit. I understand that.
Yeah, and again, it's interesting because LeVar Arrington, you know, I heard his comments on the great player that outside linebacker for the Redskins, his comments about that play in particular, about how fast the game moves, which is really, really true. The thing that the fans have to understand is the game moves so fast on the field, and television really doesn't give it, you know, doesn't really show how fast these guys are and how fast they move. And say Bridgewater comes out of the pocket, he's running for a first down, and, you know, now the defender is in a bad scenario because he has to tackle him and the quarterback loses his protection when he runs. Now, when he goes into a slide, he gains his protection back again. But you're the defender, and you're going, you're sprinting over there to make a tackle. So where I would take issue with the St. Louis play is that he launched himself at the guy's head. That's where I think it was a flagrant foul. And again, any time, and this is what teams have to understand, and coaches have to understand, any time you have a history like the Rams do through Greg Williams, you're gonna be open for criticism for these kinds of things. And Mike Zimmer, you know, went right after him in the post game press conference.
Yeah, he did. And if you are new to the NFL, Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator for the New Orleans Saints a few years back. If you look up the Bountygate scandal, they were paying players to take out opposing players on other teams. Greg Williams had a famous quote ahead of the game against San Francisco. He said, "You, how do you beat the snake? You take off the head of the snake." He was talking not literally about going for the head, but he was talking about taking the quarterback out of play. So there is that history there. And the quote that Jeff alludes to, Mike Zimmer said, "I thought it was a cheap shot. I don't think they are a very clean football team. I hope the league checks into the history of the defensive coordinator when they consider discipline this week." He also added, "If we were on the street, we probably would have had a fight." Now, this is some interesting stuff from a coach, Jeff. And then Jeff Fisher has responded, because Mike Zimmer gave a very brief handshake and then moved on. And Jeff Fisher said that Mike Zimmer needs to go back and look at the film before acting that way. Well, I think the film still shows it was a bad hit. Rodney Harrison on NBC Sunday Night Football chimed in and said that, you know, Jeff Fisher's teams have always played this way. And this is incredible to me, Jeff, because Jeff Fisher said about Mike Zimmer, he said, I don't know who they're playing this week, but we've moved on and we're thinking about Chicago. But then when Rodney Harrison was critical of Jeff Fisher, Jeff Fisher came back and said, well, that's rich coming from Rodney Harrison, who had 18 unnecessary roughness penalties, 7 personal fouls, 4 rough in the passer calls, and 77 penalties in his career. That stuff's not just out there, Jeff. He's made somebody sit there and find that information. You're not onto Chicago at all. You're about protecting your reputation.
Well, yes, I would say that he's probably had somebody do a little research for it. but you know, again, this is what comes when you align yourself, if you will. And he and Greg go back a long way. See, I know the history. I know the lineage of these guys. Yeah. Right? Who did Jeff Fisher play for?
He was a Buddy Ryan guy.
He was a Buddy Ryan guy. Where was his first coaching job? Well, he sprains his ankle in 85, can't play that year, and Buddy brings him on as a, quote, player coach. Then he takes him to Philadelphia with him when he gets the Philadelphia job. So he's Buddy's defensive coordinator in Philadelphia. So he learned all of his football and his football philosophy from Buddy.
And Jeff, Greg, there were rumors back in the day that Philadelphia put bounties on players. There was rumors of that, weren't there, back in the late 80s?
Let me just tell you, there were facts. Those were facts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've sat with those guys, with Buddy. I've sat with Jerry Granville. I understand it was a different league at that time.
Yeah.
Shoot, Jerry put a bounty out on a kicker. I mean, but here's the deal. Now, as Jeff comes up through the football, learns his football, he learns that intimidating, tough, hit him. You know, I mean, let me tell you, I got the Falcons and the Eagles have a preseason workout.
Yeah.
All right. About 15 minutes into the team period, they have a fight that lasts 45 minutes.
Wow.
It looked like they were in World War I. You know, just the two lines just running at each other, bodies flying everywhere. And Buddy and Jerry stood in the middle of the field, and Buddy had his pipe in his mouth, and they're just watching the action in the middle of the field. So, I mean, that's where these guys come from. So, and then Greg becomes Jeff hires Greg in Houston when he was with the Oilers, takes him to Tennessee. Greg becomes the defensive coordinator. Blah, 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 blah. Well, that's where they come from. That's the school that they come out of. And, you know, there's always going to be questions that way. Jeff Fisher's teams have always been extremely physical, and that's the kind of team he wants to have, a team that runs the ball, will knock you off the ball, and play physical defense. Greg has a documented history of going over the line, and, you know, that again opens you up for those questions. I think it's interesting when we look at all these kinds of things, and you can throw Greg Hardy's situation in there too. Do you get justice or do you get the law? Right? Do you get justice or do you get the law?
Right.
The Players Association, is their job is to protect the players in every situation. The thing that is amazing to me is that the Players Association, you know, it's one of those deals. Do you have a conscience? You're protecting a guy who's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Instead of standing up and
just because I think there's protecting sight.
There's fault in every part of the system's flawed because the NFL tried to discipline him in the old way before the new CBA and, you know, that whole thing. That's how the appeal came about. The Cowboys, in my opinion, are flawed because why would you want this guy around you? And then to say he's a leader and all that, Jerry has really botched the whole deal, all right? And then, in my opinion, the union's flawed. Because if you know and you have access to the pictures and you have access to the transcript and all the things that they did, why would you protect the guy? You protect him because that's what unions do.
Yeah, but you shouldn't just do it carte blanche, should you?
Well, in my opinion, no.
No, I'm with you on that.
It's like the lawyer that defends a mass murderer and gets him off on a technicality.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you sleep at night? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you look yourself in the mirror on that one?
Yeah. It's an interesting juxtaposition going back to Jeff Fisher as well, though, Jeff, because he's the head of the NFL's competition committee. He kind of sets a lot of the rules that these players play by.
That's exactly right. That is the great, you know, irony in the whole thing is that Jeff Fisher sits on the competition committee and has sat on the competition committee for a long time. So they review these types of things and, you know, what's a legal hit, what's not a legal hit, you know. So I'm sure that'll be a topic of conversation well into the offseason.
Yeah, I just worry about these hits to the head. I mean, you're seeing players strapped to bodyboards. You're seeing players out cold on the field. I mean, God forbid it happens, but there's nothing to say that we're not going to one day see somebody who's not seriously hurt. They're past that, and then the game might change forever. I mean, let's hope that that's not the case. But these guys are getting bigger and stronger, Jeff. You can't keep taking those kind of poundings to the head and not have an impact.
Well, and I think that the league has done a tremendous job. And, you know, I'm not an apologist for the league in any way, shape, or form, but I think the league has done an incredible job in the last 5 years of moving in the right direction on player safety and continuing to try and make the game as safe as possible. And until they come down hard on these kinds of things. And you got to understand, what sounds like a big fine to us, to these guys who are making what they make,
right,
it's not, you know, you got to put it in perspective, right? So you fine a guy $25,000 who's making, you know, $100,000 a week or $200,000 a week. I mean, it's not the same impact as it would be in, you know, I don't know, like, it probably wouldn't hurt you, but me, it would certainly hurt you.
That wouldn't hurt me, Jeff. You're right. You're
king of all media in the UK.
Exactly.
I don't know how you guys are paid, but
I would have to turn the heating down on my swimming pool for a couple of days.
You have to lay off the pool boy.
Yeah, exactly. Mrs. Reynolds will be distraught. let's move on and actually talk.
Yeah, let's move on. You better move on. I think she's listening.
She didn't listen to this, thank God. Let's move on because it was a great weekend for football as well around the NFL. A couple of bits of news first. Ben Roethlisberger suffered a foot sprain during Pittsburgh's win over Oakland. Looks like he might be out about 3 weeks. And Dion Lewis tore his ACL. He's out for the season for the New England Patriots. One of the feel-good stories of the first half of the year. So let's look at some of the games then, Jeff. The Carolina Panthers are selling something. They want to know if you're buying, because last week you weren't buying what they are selling.
I'm telling you, man, I've gotten all kind, and I appreciate all the listeners weighing in on what I'm buying and what I'm selling. I got to tell you, you look at them and you just go, come on, they're not that special. But you know what? When you watch that defense play and you watch Josh Norman play and those two linebackers and the way they can get up the field and rush the passer, you recognize defensively they're going to stay in every game. And you know what? You know, credit Mike Shula and their offensive staff for what they've done with Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Because they've taken a raw athlete, maybe the best athlete in the National Football League, and that covers a lot of great athletes, and really have – given him things that he can do, put him in a situation where he's comfortable. And, you know, he's not throwing to great people. Greg Olsen is an elite player, right? But that's the only elite player that he has. They can run the ball, keep the pressure off of him. And you know what? One of the things that Newton does well, and he's done it well since he was a college player, he is one of the better deep ball throwers that there is. And at times his accuracy underneath, you know, is flawed, but he can throw the deep ball. So with his athleticism, with their ability to run the ball, with their defense, and they're solid in the kicking game, you know, you look at him and say, why not? Now, again, are they good enough if they get into a game where they have to score 40 points to win it?
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's what you got to do to beat them. You got to outscore them, and that's tough to do on that defense.
Jeff, I think Cam's all grown up. I watched him in that game on Sunday, and he seems to be relishing being in the spotlight and relishing the fact that, well, okay, this is on me, and we're a genuine Super Bowl contender. And then there was a kind of a lighthearted story, but it could have been one where Cam got himself into trouble after the game. So before the game, there was a military veteran who was a Packers fan who hung a Packers banner in the end zone. And Cam sees it as he's warming up, and he went and ripped it down and ran down the tunnel with it. And the guy has now reported Cam to the stadium officials and the police for stealing his banner. And I watched Cam's post-match press conference. Now, there's been a lot of times when he's not been very good in press conferences. And he was kind of, I thought he handled it really well. He was like, I didn't mean to disrespect the person in question, but this is about having respect for our house and defending our stadium. And I thought, considering it's a situation you could have got yourself into trouble with, you handled it really well. And I think on and off the field, Cam Newton is growing up.
I agree with you, and I tweeted that out when I watched the post-game press conference, just how impressed I was and how much leadership responsibility you can see that he has taken. And I know for a fact that Carolina has worked really hard with him since they got him as a first-round draft choice on how he handles the media, how you deal with the public, all of those things. If you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you need to be able to do those things. And I think that's a credit to Carolina, and it's a credit for him, to him, that he's been willing to listen. Because a lot of these guys, Neil, when they're making the kind of money that they're making and they have the adulation that they have, they think that they're exempt from, you know, being criticized for how they handle the media. And here's the facts. Handling the media, if you're a superstar in the National Football League, and he's in that category, handling the media is one of the parts of your job. You may not like it, but it's part of your job, and it's a responsibility that you have to the game. And I think he's figured that out with the help of the Carolina Panthers, and I give him straight A's for how he's handled that situation, because you're right, that could have blown up into a really bad thing. And he used a little humor too that I thought was good. He goes, you know, you're not going to buy a Whopper at McDonald's.
Yes.
So, you know, he deflected it, in a lighthearted, positive way.
Sean McDermott and the defensive staff there in Carolina, Jeff, they brought a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. There were a lot of blitzes, and I thought, having watched a few Panthers games this year, they weren't an overly blitzing team. What did you see? From what you saw, you know, watching the game film, what they did from a defensive point of view?
Well, you make a great point, Neil. And again, for me, when I'm watching that, I hearken back to a guy who's no longer with us right now. And he was in Philadelphia when Sean was a position coach in Philadelphia. And Sean learned at his knee, basically. And that's Jim Johnson.
Yes.
The old defensive coordinator of Philadelphia, who was really, really deeply involved with the zone blitz system that you saw in evidence in Carolina, because Carolina doesn't want to put their corners, even though they got Josh Norman, they've got some guys other guys that you got to protect a little bit in coverage. And especially against a team like the Packers, I thought they did a great job at going back in time and pulling back some of those things that Jim Johnson did with the Eagles when the Eagles were really, really good on defense. And somewhere up there, you know, he watched his young protege dialing up those zone blitzes, and I'm sure he was smiling from above.
Fantastic stuff. A great win for the Carolina Panthers. They're now 8-0 for the first time in team history. The Denver Broncos aren't undefeated anymore. So we've talked about Aqib Talib, but let's talk about the game, because it was I mean, just looking at the emotion at the end of it, Chuck Pagano looked like he was about to burst into tears. Andrew Luck was very emotional in his post-game press conference. Jeff, the Colts went up 17-0, and then they got pegged back. There was the punt return by Omar Bolden just before the half. Your guy, Emmanuel Sanders, goes 64 yards after the half. It got back to 17 apiece, and I was like, oh boy, this is now watch, because this is a team that's had it going against them for much of this year. They didn't even blink. Andrew Luck, I mean, time and time again on third down making plays. He took an absolute beating on the day. But the Colts get the win 27-24. I thought it was an incredible emotional effort as much as a physical one.
I agree with you. I thought the Colts, you know, it was, as Pagano said, it's time to either put up or shut up. And, you know, they put up. And you, if you watch the game like I watched the game, my take was that they were so much more definitive on offense.
Right.
It looked like he knew where to go with the ball. They were very much, they attacked on offense rather than, you know, and maybe this is the change in the offensive coordinator. You know, maybe Chuck Zinsky, you know, that's his influence. Now, it's 1 week, so let's see if it continues. But what I saw was an offense that was much more definitive in the routes, much more definitive in the protections, much more definitive in the run game. And that's what they need to be. I thought it was also really interesting talking about press conferences to hear your boy drop an F bomb in the post game press conference. And then as soon as he did it, he was like the kid on the third grader on the playground that is the teacher catches dropping F bombs.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, sorry. Like he was waiting for his mom to come and then paddling.
Yeah, I'm sure she probably had a word with him. Jeff, one of the things that was interesting in that game, Phil Simms, the commentator for the CBS crew, talked about being at the Colts practice on the Friday of that week, and he said it was the hardest Friday practice he'd ever seen in all of his time, either playing or covering the NFL. So, first of all, talk us through, you know, what kind of practice would a team normally have on a Friday? Are they starting to taper it down as they get towards the weekend? And also, how much can a hard, tough, physical practice help a team on Sunday?
Well, I think, you know, again, it's an indicator, you know, about where you're at right now. And I'm sure that was drilled into Indianapolis. What, again, Pagano's message is time to put up or shut up. Mm-hmm. And the toughness that you saw and the attack mentality that you saw, and when I say the attack mentality, that doesn't mean you're throwing, you know, deep balls every down. Hmm. It means that you're definitive and crisp in how you attack the defense, and that's what I saw their offense. They were more physical. They're still not very good on the offensive line, but they were trying to be more physical, and I think that was, you know, probably reflective of the kind of week they had in practice. It's very unusual to have a real physical, you know, in the NFL, a very physical Friday practice, because in the NFL, the Friday practice is considered the day before. Mm. And that's usually where you hit all your game situations, you hit all of your special situations, 2 minute, you know, 3 minute offense, 2 minute offense, hurry up, you know, coming out, going in, all of the different situations. And it's, you want it to be crisp and very, very fast and very lively, but you don't want a lot of contact because the guy's got to play in a couple days. So if that's the way that practice was, then I'm sure that was, you know, coming from directly from above, from Pagano, and saying, hey, it's time for us to put up or shut up, be physical, go back to being the team that everybody anticipated we would be coming into this year.
What did you
see? It's going to be interesting to see how they go forward.
What did you see from Denver and from Peyton Manning? He ended up just three yards shy of the all-time passing mark.
It looked to me like, and again, I would have no way of knowing this, it just appeared to me like that was on Kubiak's mind and probably on Peyton's mind, that breaking that record was important. Because I just didn't, you know, here's a team that runs the ball extremely well, and that has been their calling card in their previous wins during the season. And I think, I've got to go back and check the stats, but I don't think their running backs got that many touches. And, you know, that's a Colt defense that had been giving up yards on the ground. Mm. So, again, I thought the play calling was reflective of, you know, obviously they wanted to win the game, but getting the record in that building was important to both Kubiak and to Peyton. And I think, frankly, it cost them a little bit.
I'd say spare a thought for old friend of mine, Jeff. He's Pro Football Hall of Fame historian Joe Horrigan. Joe had to drive from Canton, Ohio to Indianapolis, so not that bad a drive. He was going to pick up the game ball that Peyton Manning threw to set the passing record, and then for security reasons they don't want to put it on a plane, so he was going to drive that ball back to Canton, Ohio, and it was going to be on display the next day. Didn't happen. Now poor old Joe's going to have to drive to Denver. Imagine his mileage. Imagine his expenses for him. It's going to be long as your arm.
It's all about per diem and mileage. Exactly. You know, per diem and mileage.
Poor old Joe. He's going to have a life on the road. Other games. I mean, let's just look at a couple of the other ones. It was an incredible weekend. Tennessee winning in overtime, 34-28 against New Orleans. Jeff, that I know we talk about, you know, Rob Ryan and pressure on him as a defensive coordinator. As a coach, when you have two guys go up for the same interception and they deflect it to the tight end for a 59-yard touchdown, do you say, well, I put my guys in the right position. There's not much more I can do for them.
Well, the bottom line is you can't play for them. And I know exactly the play you're talking about. And Marcus Mariota throws four touchdown passes in that game with no picks, and that one should have been picked and gone the other way. And, you know, that just seems to be where the Saints are at right now defensively. They can't make plays when they need to make them. And, you know, what's concerning to me when you watch the game, right, when you watch the game, there's so many guys running wide open. I mean, it's one thing to be on a 50, what we call 50-50 ball in the business. You know, it's 50% chance that our guy's going to get a 50% chance your guy's going to get. We're going to win and lose some of those. But it's when you have dropped guys and they're just people running free, that's concerning to me. And I'm sure that Sean Payton and the organization are really frustrated with that. And I know Rob's frustrated with it because, obviously, that's not the way he's coaching. But right now, they're not grasping it. And the problems with Browner continue. You know, there's more penalties. He is the most penalized corner in the league, and he's frankly – they're going after him and beating him with a, you know, it's tough for Rob right now to find a matchup he can win.
He went after the media, didn't he, afterwards? He had to be restrained from going after a reporter in the locker room, Brandon Brown.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's frustrating because when you are playing that position, when you're playing corner more than anything else, you're right in the line of fire and you're, you know, it's what makes playing, one of the things that makes playing corner so doggone hard is because, you know, if an offensive lineman messes up, a guard messes up, you know, he knows and his quarterback knows. But a lot of times, you know, the average media guy doesn't know. When you're playing corner and it's one-on-one, as much man as they play, and you get beat, then it's there for, you know, as they say, it's in front of God in Dallas, Texas. It's everybody.
Mike Mularkey was the head coach for the first time with these Titans. He has been head coach, of course, before with Buffalo and Jacksonville. I thought he made more of a priority of protecting Marcus Mariota. The offensive line had been an issue. And I love the play design, Jeff, of the winning touchdown in overtime. He rolls Mariota all the way to the right. They'd set it up, actually, with a couple of plays similar earlier in the drive. Mariota had rolled to his right and he'd thrown to the right side of the field. This time, he rolls all the way to his right and then sneaking out the backside and he arcs one to the top left-hand side of the field, and Anthony Fasano is wide open.
Yeah, and again, another indication of just how important that tight end position has become in the National Football League, because you look at the game last night, Zach Miller makes that unbelievable catch. To really probably the highlight of the night. And every week you watch the games and you see these tight ends just going off around the league. The tight end position has really, really become a position of importance in offenses because the matchups are so difficult for defensive coaches. And especially when you've got a guy like Fasano who can, you know, is a really good inline tight end as a blocker and then, you know, can do the things he can do catching the football. Those are weapons. And I'm really impressed with Mariota. And we talked about Mariota in our draft, you know, lead up to the draft last year. And, you know, could he make the transition from the Oregon offense to this offense? And, you know, I just have watched that kid since he's a high school kid at St. Louis High in Honolulu and just really believe in he's going to be really, really a special quarterback in the National Football League as long as they can keep him on his feet. That's the biggest thing, protect him and not get him hurt. Then I think he's going to be one of the ascending quarterbacks in the league.
tight ends can cause problems in the TV studio as well, Jeff, because your boy, Michael, I still can't say his name, scored another touchdown for the Saints. He's doing my head in this season. Help me out here. Come on, what is it?
Ho-ho, ho-ho, Manawanui.
So ho, it's two ho-hos.
That little micron is that little dot in his name. It's called a micron. And in Polynesian, it's like you take a breath. So it's ho-ho, Manawanui.
All right, so I actually got it. I think I got it almost right this week. 2 weeks ago, it was after the Wembley game. And I'd been working, obviously, I think I was hosting the tailgate from 9 o'clock in the morning. I did the game on the sideline. Then I went back to the studio and did another 7 or 8 hours. And late on Sunday night, your boy scored a touchdown. And I tried to say it, and I couldn't form the words. I couldn't form letters. And then after the show, we'd finished, and we record a bunch of I voiceover highlights that we play during the Sunday night game. Even when I was recording it, not live, I couldn't say it. I just called him Michael, who's your mama?
Let me tell you a little Jerry Glanville story. We're coaching at Hawaii, and Jerry has trouble with English. I mean, just regular English things. So we have this outside linebacker, Kila Kamaka Viva Ole, right?
Okay.
Kila, in a meeting one time, he raises his hand, he goes, "Coach, can you pronounce any of our names?" And he goes, "Yes, I can. Kila." That's how he left it. So you just call him Michael and you'll be fine.
All right. And I'll apologize if I ever meet him. Jeff, anything else that caught your eye from week 9 before? We'll go on to make our picks for week 10 and we'll answer some listener questions in the mailbag. Anything else catch your eye on what was a spectacular weekend?
I thought that, Buffalo, you saw what they're capable of.
Got their guys back.
I mean, yeah, you know, when they got Sammy Watkins back, you saw that vertical stretch that he can give you. Tyrod Taylor, and again, when I'm watching the game, the thing that struck me as I'm watching Buffalo is maybe the biggest loss that San Francisco had in this offseason of losses for them, losing players, losing coaches, was Greg Roman and his ability to take a quarterback who's not, quote, an NFL quarterback, doesn't fit the NFL mold, but has athleticism and can do some things, and sculpture an offense around him that fits his talents. He did it for Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, and he's doing it for Tyrod Taylor, a guy that, frankly, Baltimore just gave up on and said he's never going to progress to be an NFL quarterback, and he's out there making plays. I thought he played extremely well with both his feet and his arm in that game.
Yeah, that game was notable as well from a British point of view. Jay Ajayi, the British running back, made his season debut for the Miami Dolphins. He's been out with a rib injury. He had 5 carries for 41 yards. Just on the Patriots, Jeff, which was a very routine win, kind of what we've become used to. But I had a question in the mailbag asking about the loss. I can't find the name now, but it was about the loss of Deion Lewis and how they...
Deion Lewis?
Yeah, how they are going to overcome that. I mean, I saw that Brandon Bolden had a touchdown catch. I mean, they always seem to have a next man up theory, but they've lost some players on the offensive line. Now they've lost a running back. Yeah, I mean, well, I guess we're just looking for chinks in the armor, aren't we? Patriots fans will be marching on and hoping for an undefeated season, but is this going to affect them badly?
Well, I certainly anytime you lose a player, it affects you. But what the Patriots have an uncanny ability to do is just plug guys in. And, you know, you look at the production that they get out of guys who, you know, weren't highly thought of in the draft, you know, cast off free agents. You know, it's uncanny how Belichick and his people can put guys into situations and give them something that they can do and get production out of guys that, frankly, in other systems couldn't produce. And, you know, I'm watching San Diego last night, and, you know, I'm watching that young running back, and I'm just thinking he just doesn't fit in that system.
Yeah.
And it's extremely frustrating, I'm sure, for San Diego Charger fans. I'm sure it's frustrating for him. But he's an I-formation, downhill tailback. That's what he was at Wisconsin. And he's playing in a system that just doesn't fit his skills. Now, Todd Gurley, on the other hand, is the same kind of back, and he's in a system that, you know, is catered to his skill set. That's one of those situations that you talk about great coaching. Well, great coaching is taking the player and then putting the player in a position to do what that player can do well and not ask him to do things that he doesn't do well.
Jeff, that's interesting, actually. And I noticed watching that Minnesota-St. Louis game on Sunday, just how, you know, what a difference it makes when Adrian Peterson was like 7 yards back from the line of scrimmage. So from a coach's point of view and from a X's and O's point of view for a running back, you know, these different places that running backs line up behind the line of scrimmage, how does that change how they can run and how they can see a defense?
Well, most running backs would rather be in the pistol or the eye,
right,
because it gives them a little more depth, a little more time to read the blocking scheme in front of them, and the ability to cut back. You know, they're able to enter. And I don't want to get too deep in the X and O's, but you assign a gap to every spot between offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
So outside the tight end is the D gap, inside the tight end is the C, inside the tackle is a B, inside the guard is an A. Well, when you're in the pistol and you run the ball, you now have the ability to hit from D gap to D gap, basically the entire offensive line. When you're in any flat back system where you're out next to the quarterback, particularly in the shotgun, you're really limited in terms of how many of those gaps you can attack. And the more gaps that are available to the running back, the greater his chances of finding a crack in the defense. And, you know, that's why typically most backs like to be back there so that they have the vision to see and have the ability to go from D gap to D gap on their entry.
It's interesting. Interesting the different places they can line up. A couple of other sort of notes I made, Jeff. I noticed this great stat from Peter King. Since the overtime rules were in place, there have been 530 overtime games. Only 10 times has the team not asked for the football to start the period. I know we had a famous one a couple of years ago where Bill Belichick gave the ball to Peyton Manning first, and because of the wind. Well, the wind was really blowing one way between Minnesota and St. Louis on Sunday, and Greg Zuerlein had already kicked a 61-yarder. So Mike Zimmer took the wind and didn't take the football. I mean, a touchdown could have ended it there, but he put faith in his defense, and it worked.
Yeah, I think you got it. That's the biggest thing. If you choose not to take the ball, there has to be an extenuating circumstance. It either has to be you're in a game where the wind is such a factor, or you just have so much faith in your defense being able to get a two and or three and out that, you know, it's worth taking that risk, because the common held notion is that you take the ball, always take the ball.
Mm. This is, Jeff, there's so much stuff in the NFL every week where you just think that defies logic. You know, the Colts beating the Broncos. If I'd have told you at the start of the season, if we were recording this podcast in the summer and I said, you know what, this year, Jeff, the 49ers are going to win a game with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback, Sean Drawn is going to be their leading rusher, and Quinton Patton's going to be their leading receiver. And they go and knock off Atlanta with Blaine Gabbert looking like looking not very much like Blaine Gabbert we saw in Jacksonville.
I was going to say, now, easy. Whoa, whoa, slow down there, big fella. Nothing. You know, the only way I would have thought that could happen was if they somehow were able to schedule San Jose State. San Jose State didn't appear on the schedule. And, you know, here's an Atlanta team that's playing really good football and one of the hotter teams in the league. And, you know, San Francisco, you know, rises up and plays well. And I think Gabbert's going to, you know, he's going to parlay that into a second start this week.
Yeah, he's going to start against Seattle. All right, let's make our picks. I went 8-5 last week. Jeff, you were 6-7.
Damn.
I just left it quiet there just for your reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
how about the 1 week where I was whatever I was, where I only lost one of you, and then you even said on that.
Hey, I'm on to the next week, Jeff. This is
on to the next week.
Listen, I don't know if you know, but this is a what have you done for me lately business.
All right, don't lose your focus, big boy.
I know this is a podcast in association with skysports.com. I'm just going to give a shout out to the BBC Highlights Show, which begins tonight, Tuesday, 12:15 on BBC Two. You should all check that out as well, because the more people that watch that, the more you come and watch Sky Sports coverage, and the more this great sport grows. Let's move on to week 10 then, starting off with the Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets. Jeff, actually a question here from Malcolm Harvey in the mailbag says, how far can the Jets go with their stifling defense and their ace running back? Well, actually last week all I saw was, you know, the Jags ripping them apart in the passing game. The Raiders did it the week before in the passing game. Chris Ivory had two rushing touchdowns, but he did only have 26 yards on 23 carries. There might be some concern for Jets fans, so I'm going to actually, just on this game, I'm going to pick Buffalo to win on the road.
Well, I think this one's going to be really, really interesting. Did you see who Buffalo named as team captain this week?
Yeah, the guy who punched Geno Smith in the jaw. That's what Rex does, doesn't he? Richie Incognito was the captain against the Dolphins.
Rex just loves to stir it up, I'm going to tell you now. I'm going to take the Jets. I think Jets are a better football team. I think, you know, they've got all the, although they haven't, you know, they kind of sputtered a little bit, but I think at home, and I think it's going to be an emotional, really physical game, and Todd Bowles will stay out of it. He will not going to give you anything to put in the media. He'll let Rex do all that, but I think in the end, I think the Jets will win the game.
All right, moving on to Sunday's games. Jacksonville at Baltimore. I think Blake Bortles. I think Blake Bortles will throw three touchdowns. He'll throw a couple of interceptions. The Jags will look like they're about to win the game. Then they'll turn the ball over somewhere. They'll have another moral victory in defeat. I'm going to pick Baltimore. Because I'm getting frustrated with the Jags because they're so close.
Well, yeah, they are so close. But, you know, Baltimore's struggling so much. And they're 2-6. It's been just a disastrous season for them. This is one of those games that could go either way, but I'm gonna say that somehow, some way, Jacksonville against that depleted secondary in Baltimore is going to find a way to win.
All right, yeah, Hearns and Robinson were good again last week for the Jags. Detroit at Green Bay. I mean, I'm going to go Green Bay here.
Oh, this one could get ugly. Yeah. This one could get ugly because Green Bay's got, you know, two losses in a row for I don't know when the last time that's happened, and that it's not going to be three.
All right, so we're both going Green Bay in that one. Miami at Philadelphia is our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday. Miami have some defensive issues, Jeff, that I think will probably get or could get exposed again on the road this week against the Eagles. There was a short fix with Dan Campbell coming in, as you sometimes see, but it was against Tennessee and Houston. Miami have been found out the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Dan's going to be fighting for this job now, right?
Yeah.
So he had that initial two-game holiday, and now kind of come back to reality these last 2 weeks. These next four or five games are going to be critical for him if he thinks he's going to get that job on a full-time basis. I just think that the Eagles are starting to get healthy and starting to wake up a little bit, and, you know, I think the Eagles will win that one at home. Eagles are in the heat of that NFC East battle, and they need this game.
Absolutely. So we're both going Philadelphia in that one. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. So Landry Jones will be back at quarterback, but Pittsburgh will be just looking to survive, ready for Big Ben coming back. I mean, this is a couple of times now they've lost their quarterback this season. Last time around, they turned to Michael Vick and then to Landry Jones. This time it's quite rightly straight to Landry Jones. I'm still going to pick Pittsburgh to win here.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh's a better team all in all. And you know, Cleveland is struggling, as they always are, it seems, and, you know, the Joe Thomas trade that didn't happen and all the, you know, stuff swirling around that now. It just seems like Cleveland can't get right in any aspect.
Chicago at St. Louis. If Jeff Fisher is finished with the Rodney Harrison stats by the weekend, will he coach his team to a victory?
Well, the Bears are getting better. I mean, if you watch the Monday night game last night, you know, they're starting to get it. You know, they're starting to get Fangio's defensive scheme, although, you know, Phillip Rivers, I feel sorry for him because he's just like such a great competitor, makes so many great plays, and he just doesn't have any players around him. And I think the Bears have done a great job of kind of mitigating Cutler's, you know, challenges offensively. I think this is a game that St. Louis has to win to, you know, keep pace in the West. So I'm going to give St. Louis the nod.
I'm going to give St. Louis the nod as well. The Chargers are on a bye, but just I wrote about this last week, Jeff. I think when we look back historically on Phillip Rivers' career, we'll see that Chargers wasted a lot of good years.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, you know, he's kind of like Dan Fouts in some ways, you know. Just a great, great player. You know, Fouts was
one of
the greatest quarterbacks ever play the game, and he had a bunch of offensive weapons around him, but they couldn't play a lick of defense. And you can't outscore everybody every week in this league. And kind of the same things happen for you know, this guy. And it's just tough because you watch Phillip Rivers go out there, and every day he competes his tail off and he makes plays that just, I mean, you almost defy description sometimes where the ball comes from and how he gets it out. And, you know, he's getting hit in the face and making plays. And, you know, it's sad because there's a guy that deserved better.
All right, moving on to Dallas at Tampa Bay. So the Cowboys are now 0-6 without Tony Romo. They potentially get him back for a Week 11 game at the Miami Dolphins. So do they get their first win without Romo this week against the Buccaneers on the road?
Yeah, I just think Tampa's a bad football team. Mm. And, you know, I think there's it's a combination of a bunch of things. You know, they've had guys hurt. You know, you're trying to learn on the job with a rookie quarterback. The receivers have dropped balls when he's put the ball there. And defensively, you know, frankly, I think people have caught up to the Tampa 2 system a little bit. So I think the Cowboys can win. They need to win this game. They're in critical mode right now.
Absolutely. No room for error now for the Cowboys. I'm going Dallas as well in that one. Carolina at Tennessee. I'm going Carolina to march on.
Yeah, I think so. And again, it's amazing because, you know, you look at them and it's that same old story of, you know, the sum being greater than the parts, you know, and congratulations to Ron Rivera because I think he and his staff are doing a great coaching job.
New Orleans at Washington. So I actually watched quite a few bits of the Redskins-Patriots game on the Red Zone last week, Jeff. And actually, Kirk Cousins, he should be apologizing for hitting his receivers in the hands because they were putting so many of them on the floor. They weren't helping him out. I mean, you know, give the guy some help.
Yeah, I just, you know, they have gotten better and they can run the ball a little bit. And, you know, their defense is kind of, but Jesus, they find ways to lose. And, you know, again, you look at New Orleans on the other hand and they can put up huge numbers but can't seem to stop anybody. So, you got to say New Orleans is a better team starting with the quarterback. Mm. And, you know, hopefully on defense, Rob can get those guys all on the same page and they can get a win here.
All right, both going New Orleans in that one. Our second game on Sky Sports, potential to be a good one. Let's hope Teddy Bridgewater passes all the concussion protocols this week because it's Minnesota at Oakland. Jeff, the Oakland Raiders are so exciting to watch on offense, but they gave up nearly 600 yards of defense on Sunday.
Yeah, you know what? They're a young team, and they make young team mistakes right now. Mm. But they got a young quarterback that really, really is a bright light. And they got some receivers. Crabtree's, you know, kind of rejuvenated his career. And, you know, they've got the young receivers around him and a running back that can run. And, you know, that they've kind of helped themselves, you know, offensively with what they're doing and helps that offensive line. But you got to play defense in this league. And, you know, there were too many times in that game where they had opportunities to take control of the game and, you know, didn't do it. So, you know, it's a tough one. But, you know, I think they'll bounce back. I think that they got a chance at home to Carr and those guys to score enough points that they can win.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Oakland to win that one as well. So we're both going Oakland. Kansas City at Denver. So there's no DeMarcus Ware for the Broncos. He's out injured. There's potentially no Aqib Talib if that suspension holds up. Kansas City have won two in a row. Can they make it three in a row at Mile High?
You know, to me, the story is more can Denver bounce back from that, you know, from that loss in Indianapolis? And I really believe they can. I mean, obviously, you know, losing Ware and losing Talib would really hurt the defense, but it's not the defense is the issue, I think, in Denver. It's going to be, you know, offensively, can they get the balance back? Can they run the ball well? You know, those are going to be the critical factors. And you know, I think going back home into Mile High, that gives them an edge in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take Denver as well for that one. New England at the New York Giants. I'm going to pick the Patriots to roll on.
Yeah, I think the Patriots. But, you know, the Giants are an amazing football team. I mean, again, they're a team, you look at them and, man, they look bad one week. And then they come back and you know, I know it was against Tampa Bay, but, you know, they looked so much better. But, you know, again, is anybody going to take control of that, you know, East?
No one wants it, do they?
I don't think it's going to be the Giants against the Patriots. I think the Patriots will roll on this one.
Tampa Bay tried the sort of five or six laterals at the end of the game to score the touchdown to tie it up, and they were in trouble the moment they lateraled it back to Logan Mankins. It went straight through his legs, and it ended up in a touchdown for the Giants. You don't lateral it to your big guard. Let's go Sunday night game then. Arizona at Seattle. What a cracker that could be.
That should be a slugfest.
You like that sort of game, don't you, Jeff?
Be loud. This is going to be one of those games, right? And you know what I love? I love Bruce Arians. I love the way he's got a little swagger about him, and he's going to go in there. And I think his football team's going to go in there, and they're going to say, you know, hey, we're not afraid of you. We've beaten you before. We've beaten you here before. Mm. And I think Arizona's going to beat them. I really think Arizona will beat them.
All right. You're going Arizona. I'm going to say that Seattle, I still have a sneaky feeling Seattle are going to come good in the second half of the season to some degree. I like Arizona as well, but I'm going to go Seattle to win that one. And wrapping up, Monday Night Football, Houston at Cincinnati. I'm going to pick Cincinnati to maintain their unbeaten record.
Yep, I agree with you. You know, and again, I was a little bit of a doubter early on when it was like 4-5, and I said, well, we'll see. And, you know, they just continue to play at a high level in every facet of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. So I'll give Cincinnati the nod.
All right, a couple of quick questions from the mailbag, Jeff. One here from Paul Holland, who says, do coaches who sit up in the box during a game go down to the locker room at halftime, or do they stay put? Do you go up, or do you stay up, or do you go down, Jeff? And how easy is it to get down to the locker room for some of these stadiums?
Well, normally there's a express elevator that takes the coaches down,
right,
and it's only used for the coaches. So as soon as the
you
last
don't have to stop
happens,
every floor.
No. There's a few stories I could give you out of NFL Europe about the elevators, elevators in those stadiums. But in the NFL, those guys are down really fast, and they run down through security to the locker room. And right away, what happens in the locker room is the players get a little bit of time for themselves to, you know, use the bathroom, do whatever they need to do, get equipment fixed or whatever. As the coaches are all talking about what halftime adjustments they need to make, then they'll go right into offense and defensive meeting in the locker room and go through whatever, you know, adjustments. Then you'll have another little segment of, you may get your position group for a couple minutes, and then you're out and you're going again. So the advantage they have in the National Football League is that they have the ability to have, from the booth to the sideline, pictures sent down. So the players between, and if you watch games, you'll notice that the players are always thumbing through books.
Yeah.
And those are actually what they call Polaroids from upstairs that are shot down, and they're sent down so that they can illustrate alignments, techniques, you know, formations, all of that kind of stuff for the players between series.
Jeff, I was saying the press box a couple of times. I remember seeing this in NFL Europe, and maybe they were jumping the gun a little bit because the elevators weren't the quickest in some of the stadiums. But I can remember seeing a couple of games where a team's offense was on the field, and I'd see all the defensive coaches file past the press box because the press box was out in the stadium. And then there was an interception, and I saw them running all the way back up again to get back up in the booth. I mean, they were trying to buy time and jump the gun, but you can't always do that.
Yeah, when I tell you, a quick press box story. First game we ever played in NFL Europe, we were in Edinburgh, and we're playing in the stadium in Edinburgh, and we go and come out of, Galen talks to the team, and I'm going to be up in the box, so I walk in the locker room, and you go out, and you're in the tunnel, and I asked the guy where the press box for the coaches was. He had no idea what I was asking. He had no clue what a press box was. I'm scrambling around, running around, trying to find somebody that knows where a press box was. And they had made a temporary press box in the kind of in the end zone out of plywood and plexiglass. And I finally get in the thing, and the game's already started. And Pete Garchik, our defensive coordinator, is livid. Like, where in the frick are you going? I said, Pete, nobody knows what a freaking press box is.
There were a few stadiums where they had those plywood and plexiglass coaches boxes. And one time in Frankfurt, they actually moved the reporters' press box because when they were redesigning that stadium ahead of the World Cup, and they had us sitting, normally you had a bit of separation, they had us literally the last row of the fans, and then I was in the first row of the press box, and I sat down getting ready to cover the game, and first of all there's like beer flying everywhere, and the guy in front of me has, and I know that, you know, younger listeners, you know, block your ears for a second, this guy had a blow up inflatable doll on a stick which he proceeded to wave in front of me for the entire 3 hours. Like, I couldn't see a thing. It was one of those only in NFL Europe moments, you know.
The same thing. We're in Frankfurt. You know how that box was open, and fans were right in front of you. Like you they're drinking and singing, and we got a Dusseldorf fan that's about two down from us, right?
Yeah.
And if you know German, you'll know what I'm saying. He looked up at me one time when we had a bad play, and he goes, "Was ist los? Das ist scheiße."
It's good to have that feedback, Jeff. It's good to have. That's what you get on Twitter now.
I said, "Well, that's great coaching. I'm going to take that. I'll tell them at halftime what you thought."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks for that. Good feedback. One more question, then we'll finish up. Jack Gregory says, "Where do you see the New England Patriots stumbling blocks in their remaining fixtures?" So I've got them here, Jeff. Obviously, they're trying to get that undefeated record, but more importantly, Belichick will want the Super Bowl. He won't care about the undefeated too much. They play at the Giants, home to Buffalo, at Denver, home to Philadelphia, at Houston, home to Tennessee, and then at New York Jets and Miami. So they've still got the Bills, they've still got the Broncos, they've still got the Eagles, and they've got the Giants. There's some tough games still to come for the Patriots.
Yeah, they better not focus on 16-0. They better focus on getting the next one.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of games coming up that they're going to have to play really well in, and they're going to have to play consistent. You got Buffalo who can rush the passer. We talked about Denver and what they bring. You got to go on the road, and any time you go on the road in the NFL, it's tough. Yeah. New York's going to be a tough game. They've got a number of tough games. I'm sure right now the mantra from the guy in the hood is not to look at 16-0. It's look at who we have this week, and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jeff, I think we've covered every possible but we've gone from poking in the eye to hits to the head to the eye formation running back to blow up dolls. I mean, we got it all this week. Everything's covered up. Oh, and Mrs. Reynolds and the pool boy.
Mrs. Reynolds and the pool boy. Boy, I tell you what, we are covering some ground in this podcast.
Jeff, what are you up to now? Playoff week, isn't it? What's the situation over there with Hamilton?
We host the Eastern semifinal this Sunday against Toronto. Win that one, and we go to Ottawa for the Eastern final, and then you're one game away from playing for it all. So it's playoff time, and it's a grind right now, but this is the grind that you want. A home playoff game is what you play the other 18 for, and now it's up to us. It's a one game. All the cliches come into play. It's a one game season.
Excellent. Well, we know it's a busy time for you, Jeff, so we do appreciate you joining us this week on Inside the Huddle. Always much appreciated.
All right, my man.
All right, so that's it. We are done for Inside the Huddle for another week. We'll be back the same time next week, so make sure you join us for that. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.